to the Resilient Migrant Podcast, a podcast where African immigrants get to talk about their experiences as they assimilate to a different country. This is your host, Brenda Mure.
Hi, DJ Sistuki.
Hey, how are you?
Good. It's nice to have you. I've really been waiting to have you in this podcast, and finally you're here. Mm-hmm. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
You're always traveling every weekend. Are you traveling this weekend?
This weekend? No, this weekend I'm staying put. I'm staying home this weekend.
So it's a time to relax.
Yes.
That's great. So this is the Resilient Migrant Podcast. I like talking to different African immigrants. And music is one of my passion, and you're one of my best DJs. So I'm glad to have you here. And I can't wait to hear your story.
Excellent. I'm very excited. Thank you for the opportunity for coming on.
You're welcome. So DJ Sunny, could you tell us where you were born, what country you were born in?
So I was born in Kenya, specifically in Eldoret in Kenya.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And Eldoret is becoming a big city, but am I wrong, or is it already a city?
Eldoret is becoming a big city in terms of people, but I don't think infrastructure-wise a lot has happened in terms of growing it.
So I had my guest, I believe it was on podcast 5, when one of my guests also came from Eldoret, and she told me that most runners come from Eldoret. Did you run?
Yes. No, I did not run.
Okay.
A lot of runners do come from there.
Oh, good. I personally have never been to Eldoret, so my next trip, maybe I should go to Eldoret.
I think you should.
That's good.
Yeah.
So did you go to your school, primary school, secondary school in Eldoret?
Yep. Interestingly, I went to the same school for nursery, primary, and secondary.
Oh, wow. So I'm curious. Actually, one of my fun questions is to ask people sometimes on what kind of uniforms they wore. So did you wear the same uniform throughout this?
No, so it was in the same compound.
Mm-hmm.
One building was nursery, another building was primary, and then this building on this side was secondary.
Mm-hmm.
But the uniform was different.
Mm-hmm.
The nursery, we wore bright blue shorts and a bright red sweater with a white shirt. In primary, we wore white and blue checked shirts.
Oh, wow.
Navy blue shorts and a white and blue striped tie.
Hmm.
And then in secondary, we wore gray pants. Okay. A burgundy or maroon sweater with a maroon tie with white stripes and a white shirt.
Oh, wow.
So on the compound, anytime you saw someone, you would know this person is in primary, this person is in secondary, or this person is in nursery, because obviously the nursery kids are just smaller kids. Yeah.
Oh, so that was a good way of differentiating who's where and what age.
Right.
That's good. So for the context of this podcast, most Kenyans come from the black community, but you're Indian. You have a Indian descent. So that's very interesting. I'm curious, considering that the majority of the Kenyans are from the black, how was life for you being from an Indian descent, though you're Kenyan?
I don't think I would call it being very different. In fact, I think I'm fortunate to have had that level of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Having been born in Kenya, mm-hmm. My father was born in Kenya, so was my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother was born in India.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in Kenya, it's like our friends circle growing up in school, you know, it's pretty diverse. People from different places, people from different tribes. And so it never really occurred to me that I was in Kenya and I was an Indian, obviously, as a child. Then as you grow older, you start realizing that, oh, yeah, they guess I'm Indian and I'm not black and stuff like that. But I think my parents did a very good job of not making it seem like we were different, right? So my friends were, again, from all over the world, a lot of black friends, a lot of people from, from every tribe. And I would go to their houses for play dates. They would come to our house for play dates. A lot of my dad's friends, close friends who we would go for family dinners with and stuff like that were Kenyans who were black. Obviously, we had friends who were Indians as well. We had white friends. Believe it or not, even way back then, this is the 90s, we had Chinese friends who had grown up in Kenya and stuff like that. So I was very fortunate in that sense to have a very diverse pool of people to have around me while growing up.
Wow, interesting. Very interesting. It's good to know that. I hadn't even thought that in the 90s we had Chinese in Kenya, because personally I never saw them.
Yeah, there were very few. I think there was a business friend of my dad's who, my uncle's who was, I believe he was Chinese. And I think there was only Chinese in Eldoret at that time. Maybe there were more, but yeah. So we had friends, all kinds of friends from everywhere in the world, which was very good.
Oh, good. So DJ Sunny Sistuki, right now you're in the U.S. So what made you move from Kenya to the United States?
Well, I think it's a very similar story for a lot of immigrants. You know, you meet so many people here and you talk to them about what brought them here. And the story seems to almost match. I came for school. I came here to go to school. I went to school for engineering. I went to the University of Missouri, Columbia. And I did a couple of years there in Missouri, and then I moved to North Carolina.
Good, good. So was there an adjustment for you or any culture shocks when you came to the U.S.?
Oh, absolutely. I think my first 2 years, I hated it over here. I think part of the reason why was because I landed in Missouri, and a very small college town in Missouri for that. So what you see in TV as America and where I ended up, it was a big contrast. There was, I was walking everywhere and there was snow up to my knees and it was cold. I had never felt cold in that sense. And, my first job was working as a dishwasher at a restaurant. And it was a buffet restaurant. So I would leave the restaurant soaking wet and it was like 5 or 10 degrees outside. And I would have to walk soaking wet to where I was staying. You know, in Kenya, you're used to, you know, driving places. Not that you can't drive here, but if you don't have a car, you don't have to know someone with a car. Where I was, there was not a lot of public transportation. So you're used to having house help. You're used to having, you know, someone clean for you, someone do all these things for you. And then on top of that, you have to work. Not that I worked when I was in Kenya, but working in Kenya and working in America are two very different things.
Oh, yes.
Here, there's it seemed like there was a level of micromanagement. There's, you're paid hourly. You know, your lunch breaks are very weird. Your coworkers are weird. The food was weird when I first came here. Everything tasted bland. Believe it or not, I came here and I would eat sandwiches. I would go to restaurants to eat. Everything just tasted bland. The tea didn't taste right. The coffee didn't taste right. Nothing tasted right.
It's totally different. Did you at one time say, okay, I'm taking my bags, I'm going back home?
I don't think I could do that. I left Kenya with almost this premise that I'm leaving, I'm going on my own. And as a teenager, I was 18 when I left Kenya.
Very young.
Yeah. And you're a little hard-headed. So you have a very big ego at that age, and you don't want to go back saying I didn't make it in America. So you just familiar. You just say, you know what? And then you see all this, you see other people who are successful and they motivate you. And they tell you they started like this. My older sister being one of them, she had already been in the US for a few years. She had gone through struggling in college, working, you know, 4 or 5 jobs, waiting tables, cleaning places, went through college, got a job, and now she lived. I had visited her and I saw she had a nice living condition, drove a nice car, and it was a matter of maybe, you know, 5-6 years before that, she was complaining about the same things that I was going through. So, and I met a couple of really good friends in Missouri, you know, some, and two guys I'm still very good friends with, Ken and Tony. They had been in Missouri for a long time and, you know, they had decent lives. I could see they were not struggling as much. So I was like, okay, there's light at the end of the tunnel. You just gotta keep pushing.
That's true. It gave you hope and a reason to keep fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious, when you came to the U.S., considering you're from Indian descent, Do you have any challenges trying to explain to somebody where you come from? I'm just asking that because sometimes, obviously, there's a lot of discrimination, a lot of bias, a lot of stereotypes with where people come from. What has been your experiences?
Well, you know, first of all, when Americans ask me where I'm from and I say Kenya, they're like, oh, really? Some people don't know where Kenya is. They're like, oh, cool. And then the ones that really know, okay, Kenya is in Africa. Majority of the Kenyans don't look like me. Then they will ask you, oh, how comes? And then you'll have to explain.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got tired of explaining at some point. But then what was really shocking is when you meet fellow Kenyans
mm-hmm.
and you tell them you're from Kenya, and almost all of them don't want to believe you. And mm-hmm. you come to, you're like, wait a minute. And then most of the Kenyans I come to meet, they're from Nairobi. They're not even from Eldoret, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, guys, stop being so ignorant. You saw people like me growing up. You know, so why is it so shocking to you that I speak fluent Swahili, mm-hmm. that I tell you I'm from Kenya, and a lot of people will be like, ah, pana, watch out, you know, you're not from Kenya. Why are you lying to us? You know, this. And then on top of that, when I started doing house parties in college, mm-hmm. a lot of Kenyan parties, and I would DJ and I would do a lot of Kenyan music and stuff like that. You know, I would hear a lot of people who thought I did not speak Swahili talk about me like, ah, sasa wana wametuletea, oh, jaman, nani wametuletea tucheze mziki, you know, this, that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go back and shock them when I tell them I actually understood what you said, and this is, you know, me in Kenya, so.
Yeah, okay.
And that's what I found more shocking than the Americans is Kenyans, for some reason, there's a good, not all of them, but for some reason, when we come to America, we forget that we have diversity in Kenya.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. You think diversity exists only in America. And in Kenya, everyone needs to look a certain way and talk a certain way.
Wow. Great, great experiences. It's good to hear from you, DJ Sunny Sister K, about your experiences. And you talked about the parties you used to DJ. I want us to turn the conversation now to your DJing. You're a very great, great DJ. You do a great work. I follow you on social media. And for those who don't follow him, please do follow Sunny Sister K. He does a great work. So what prompted you to be a DJ?
So it's always been in my family. Growing up, one of my uncle's really good friends who lived with us in the same house,
mm-hmm.
He was a DJ. And we had the turntables and speakers and everything in our house, basically. And every time he had an event, back then, it wasn't, speakers were huge. The turntables, the machines were huge. Everything was huge. Just to transport the music alone, he had crates and crates of records when he had to go DJ somewhere. So we had to get 2 lorries every time he had a gig just to transport the sound and the music. And I used to go help set up everything from the time I was 10 or 11 years old. I used to go help with the wiring, with setting up lights. And so, you know, every time he had a disco, he had a gig, I used to go help set up. And then while he was DJing, I just used to sit behind the DJ booth on a stool and watch mm-hmm. people dance, watch him play music, watch him entertain people, watch the crowd's reaction when something is played. And it was always something that I was very fond of, how a person can manipulate someone's mm-hmm. emotions on the fly. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've seen artists do that, singers do that on stage and concerts. You know, I remember growing up, I used to watch on TV concerts done by Michael Jackson, and I used to watch people crying in the crowds as he's performing. And it always fascinated me how you can, one person has the ability to affect people's emotions like that. And in a good way, you know,
mm-hmm.
make people feel a certain energy, make people feel so good about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And music has a way of doing this. And, as a DJ, manipulating the music to be able to do that is something that I found very, very interesting. And I decided to, I always had a passion from it from that young age, having mm-hmm. been exposed to it all that time.
Wow. So what was your biggest challenge when you wanted to make it a career?
Getting paid.
Because people didn't believe it's something that they need to pay for, or...
Because, you know, as you're starting out, obviously you're trying to master your craft. And I wouldn't say by any means that I have mastered it. There's always, you're still always learning. You're always growing. But as you're trying to get better and better, your value starts at a very low point when you're starting out. So I remember doing, I remember just taking a gig because it would pay me $50, you know, or taking a gig where they would say, just come. And then depending on how the gig does, and Kenyan DJs and promoters can relate to this, when they're told, when someone is told, kuja tu, and then depending on how the gig does, we'll pay you. If the gig does well, you'll get paid well. If the gig doesn't do well, you won't get paid well. And you just do it so that you have a chance to show people what you are able to do and have a chance to perform in front of a crowd. And most of the time, the gigs did well and the pay didn't do well. Like, we had so many expenses. There were always excuses. So it was always something I did on the side. And we started doing it on the side, small parties here and there, clubs, weddings, corporate events. Invested in more equipment as I started doing it more. And then I went into promoting events here in North Carolina. From promoting events, we went into doing concerts. So back in 2016, I did a couple of concerts here in Raleigh. Wire, Nameless, Alain, DeMarco, Chris Martin. I also did Saudi Soul here in Raleigh. So I dabbled into doing events, concerts, promotions, without really being the person, the talent. And then went back into being the talent. So I think all that was a setup towards, there's a song that Klepto sang way back in the day, the Tuendelea Matusiendelea. He says, Jipe miyakaka nane ndiujulikane.
Wow.
Right? So a lot of times people see, oh, this guy, he's just suddenly everyone knows about him and all that. But it's nothing that started yesterday. You know, I was fortunate that during COVID, when we started live streaming, that what my work resonated with so many people. But that the fact that it resonated with so many people is not something that I just started doing and it suddenly resonated with people. It's something I had been doing for a very long time. And it was years of preparation for that moment. Mm-hmm. And the moment that I wasn't aware was the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So because I wasn't aware that that was the moment, I was not nervous about it. I was just doing what I've done over years. And this time I was just doing it online as opposed to, in person. Mm-hmm. And that resonated so well that it finally led to making a career out of it.
Wow. So are you doing this full time now?
I am, yes.
Wow. I like the fact that you talked about the price you have to pay before you make a name and before you create a business. I'm wondering, what would be your advice to someone who, if you look at Sunny about 10 years ago, what advice would you give him, or someone who's starting actually?
You know, it's, I always think, would I have done this differently? Would I have, I've known professional DJs, I've talked to certain people, and I have a podcast myself, so I've interviewed DJs myself as well. And I've talked to people who have decided that this is their passion and they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it on the side. They're going to pursue it full time. And they go through the struggles of doing that. I, on the other hand, decided to take on a more corporate role, get a full-time job and do this on the side and build it slowly to where it got to where I could transition into this. And I don't think either one is a bad thing. If I was to look back to my older self and say, how do you want to do this? I don't think I would have done it any differently. Primarily because the years I spent in corporate America, I spent it in customer service, I spent it in sales, and I got all, and my ambitious nature got me to a very high level of management, to almost an executive level in what I did. And because of that, I got a lot of good experience in business that I can definitely now apply towards doing this as a career full time. I was watching a documentary one time by Pitbull. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Oh, I love Pitbull. He's one of my musicians. Yeah. I like him, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things Pitbull said once is, one of the reasons why he's so successful is what he does is 10% music and 90% business.
Mm.
When I go do a show or when someone is performing, it's 2 hours, 3 hours, maybe 4 hours at the most. And you get paid X amount of dollars for doing that 4-hour show or 3-hour show. However, the weeks of what happened for that show to happen, the press, the public relations, the promotions, the negotiation, there's so much that goes on before someone shows up and does a performance somewhere, however small or however big, that you think about, oh, I got paid X amount of dollars for doing a 3-hour show. No, I got paid X amount of dollars for preparing for a month for that show,
mm-hmm.
for negotiating contracts, for doing all these things. And that is where I think the business part of it comes into play. So a lot of people that go into it solely as a passion, without a manager, without any experience in the business side of things from a very young age, more power to them. If they, and those who actually made it, is they learned some lessons the hard way and they applied certain things. And eventually they realized the business side of things. obviously, I think I'm to a point where I've been able to take some customer experience, customer service experience, some sales experience. And I've, from obviously the crowd that I'm entertaining is my audience, but the person hiring me is my customer. And I have come to find out, I'm still figuring it out, but also I've formatted a way to present value to my customer and then entertain my audience. Because as a DJ, your customer are two people, is the promoter and your audience. And so when you're doing your own event, there is no promoter. You are your promoter, and so the customers are your customers, the audience are your customers. And you have to figure out how to provide them with the most value. When you are getting paid by a promoter to go to a different city and do an event, that promoter is your customer. And if you figure out how to make your customer's job easy, and give them the most value for their money, then I don't think they'll have a problem booking you again.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, another thing that keeps other businesses going is repeat customers. So you want to figure out how you can do put such an impression that you can have repeat business in different places. So hopefully I am able to do that.
Wow. Wow. Great, great work. And I like the fact that you talk about the work you have to do and, before you make a name for yourself. Great, great work. I am curious, when it comes, you've talked about having DJed in so many places. Is there one place that's always on your mind? Like a great party or a great situation or a great city that you've always like, oh wow, that was a great party. That was a great event.
You know, I get asked that a lot, and I don't know that I can pinpoint any one place that was just like, oh my goodness. Every experience has been very fulfilling. And I say that mainly because of one. Before I get started and after I'm done, the crowds, the people that come out and want to take pictures with me, and we interact with them, and everyone says how much fun they had, and watching the crowd reaction as I'm performing and all that stuff. I think whether it was in front of 500 people or in front of 50 people, because I've done some more intimate events where I've booked for a private event. I was booked for a private event for a birthday where there were only 35 people, you know, but it was an event that was going to have only 35 people, and I was booked for it. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think just seeing, I wouldn't say that the events with 500 people and the events with 35 people, one resonates more with me than the other. I think it's just every single place I've been to has been amazing. And it's because of my audience, the way they react to what I do and how they enjoy themselves and how they come and interact with me after the fact. I wouldn't say that there's any one place that stands out over the other.
Wow. So I'm also curious. I want to throw these questions to you. You have upcoming events. Is there one event you're looking forward to very much?
So I actually have a New Year's Eve event I'm doing right here in Raleigh. I had a lot of offers to do New Year's Eve all over the country, but I had already planned on putting together an event here in Raleigh that I'm promoting myself. promoting it with a Caribbean group. I really like doing events that have more diversity. And the events I've been able to put together here in Raleigh of late have been very diverse. So we have a good Caribbean following that shows up. We have a good African following that shows up, not just Kenyan, but from all over Africa. Yeah. And then we also have a good Latino following that shows up. Mm. And being able to infuse music from these three different parts of the world, and African music being so diverse from, you know, all over Africa, and then Caribbean music being so diverse from the islands to Jamaica, you know, from reggae, dancehall, soca, and then being able to do a lot of Latino music as well from, you know, reggaeton and bachata and merengue, and being able to infuse all that into one event has always been like what I really enjoy doing. So I'm really looking forward to New Year's Eve. We're having it right here in Raleigh, North Carolina at Umami, which is a family business. My sister and my brother-in-law own that. And we do an event there once a month. So that's with the next events coming up, that's the next event I'm really looking forward to. Also, December 24th, Christmas Eve, I'll be back in Dallas. I do have to say Dallas has shown me a lot of love. I think I've been to Dallas, I've lost count, probably 6 or 7 times. So I'll be back in Dallas on the 24th on Christmas Eve at Rafiki's. It's always a vibe being there.
You're really teaching us a lot about being a DJ, and I'm glad I'm having this conversation with you, because for a long time there was this stereotype that DJs can't, it's not a career. Like, there was always that negative connotation when it came to DJs, but you're really, really talking, teaching us a lot. So I'm sure there are listeners who are out there, either parents or kids who want to be a DJ. What would be your advice to them?
So my advice would be, what you see, the glamour, the partying and the drinking and women hanging around you, or what the glamour, get that out of your mind. You know, number one, if someone's going to do it for that, then it's gone. What it is, you know, be ready to work. Just like when you go to work, prepare for your events, research your crowd, who's going to be there, what is the preferred, what do people enjoy where you're going, research the area, be on time. I pride myself a lot on being on time, and in the entertainment industry, a lot of people break a lot of professional codes, that if you had a meeting at a certain time, you would show up on time. But if you're a DJ, you have to show up at a club, that you show up at midnight or you show up at 1. Get there on time, you know. Conduct yourself professionally. Don't overdrink when you're working. You know, and so in this industry, there's a lot of DJs that don't conform to that professional code. And, you know, when you conform to that professional code, but then you have to strike a balance, because when you try and be too professional, your audience may look at you as being not with the wrong energy, that they want to party, they want to let loose. But be ready to balance that. Be ready to show them that you're here to let loose, you're here to party. And also be ready to, with your customers, with your promoters, with everything, you know, just be very professional and realize that, you know, if you need, like when you're doing events back to back, get your sleep. Because if you have an event today and you have another one tomorrow and you end up overdoing it today, tomorrow you're going to suffer. Your performance is going to suffer. But as a lot of times in this industry, people don't realize that these professional codes have to be taken seriously. If you are to be taken seriously, you know, do a sound check, make sure that the sound is right. Make sure, because you might be in a venue where the sound and how the place sounds is beyond your control, but you could have gotten there way earlier, checked on it. If it was not sounding right, you could have made some phone calls. You could have done some things. Just because this mentality of "it's not my job" comes in, then you are the one who's going to suffer, because people will say, "Anilienda show ya fulani, I went to so-and-so's show, the sound sucked. I went to so-and-so's show, the lines were too long. I went to so-and-so's show, the bartenders were too..." So when I go to an event, I like to get there really early. I like to check the sound. I like to interact with the bartenders. I like to interact with who is going to be at the door. I like to interact with the security. Let them know who I am. And that way everyone feels like they're involved. Okay, this guy didn't just come in and leave. And you feel like you're involved with a bunch of different people. And everyone at least feels a sense of, I don't want to let this person down.
Wow. So it's real. It's a real business. The people who think this is not a business or is not professional, as DJ Sunny Sistuki talked about, professional code is very important. Thank you so much. So I am very curious. I want to turn the tables around. You travel a lot. I'm sure there are stresses in life. You have a family. How do you cope up with stressful situations? I like asking that. I'm a behavioral health professional. So that's one of the questions I always ask. How do you cope up with your stress?
So one of the things I always told my employees when I worked full-time is control what you can control. Mm-hmm. So if something comes up, a situation comes up, what is within my control right now? And I'm going to do my best to get that to a favorable outcome for myself. If it's something beyond my control, delayed flight, the hotel won't check me in till 3, even though I've stayed with them everywhere and my status with them, and they say, we are just full, we can't get you in till 3. Okay, take an Uber, go somewhere, eat, come back, or whatever, you know. And not to panic, not to let my blood pressure go up, in other terms, like just trying to stay calm. And when a problem presents itself, try not to wallow yourself too long in the problem. When a problem comes up, immediately start figuring out what is the solution. Because trying to stay in the problem for too long and think too long about the problem and think about what ifs and I should have and no, this is the current situation. How do we find a solution? You know, and in terms of finding a solution, what can I do about it right now? If there's something that is beyond my control, you end it. It's as long as it's not going to kill me, then, you know, we'll figure it out. Just figure out what's within our control.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I like knowing how people cope with their stresses, because each one of us is different. And I also like the fact that earlier on you had mentioned about how you also see music change the emotions of people. That's a great, great tool, for people. As a person who's in, behavioral health, one of the things that I personally encourage is for people to create a playlist. Because again, music help with the emotional mood. So DJ Sunny, as we almost ending this podcast, I'm sure you were thinking about this podcast, about some of the questions I might ask you. Is there one question you think I should have asked you but did not ask?
No, you know, I don't think much about these things. I've done a few interviews and I go into it with a blank slate. Because again, I don't have control over what you're going to ask unless I tell you, ask me this, don't ask me this. And if I told you to ask me this and not to ask me this, it's not fair to your audience. So again, I just go with it as a blank slate. I just answer the questions as they come. I didn't think about any questions in terms of how they were coming or how they were not coming.
I need to pick that attitude from you because I stress a lot with these interviews.
You know, I always said to my employees again, where I used to work at, is the only thing you have full control over is your attitude. You know, I can't control what you're going to do. I can't control what anyone else is going to do. I can control my attitude. So whatever I'm faced with, as long as I can control my attitude and keep it positive, keep it upbeat, then at the end of the day, that's what's going to be good for me.
Yep. Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much, Sunny. So I want to turn this question, as we are almost ending again, to some fun questions. Is there, can you teach us a word, either by thank you or anything in Indian? Because I like promoting diversity on this podcast.
Yeah. So My family, we speak Gujarati.
Gujarati?
Right, which is from a state in India called Gujarat. Then there's also Hindi, which is commonly spoken in India. So I can speak Hindi to some extent, because we grew up watching Indian movies. That's what they speak in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But because we spoke at home with my parents and grandparents and family, mm-hmm. we spoke mm-hmm. Gujarati. So probably, let me think of a word. I will ask, since I'm drinking tea, I will ask you if you would like to have some tea.
Okay.
Yeah. Tea is chai, which is, so basically it's the same word in Swahili and in Gujarati.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say something like chai piviche,
mm-hmm.
which means
chai
piviche.
Piviche.
P as in Paul,
P-I-V-I-C-H-E. Okay.
Would you like to drink some tea?
Uh-huh.
Or you could say the exact same thing and say, I would like to drink some tea.
Okay.
It's just the tone, whether you ask it as a question
mm-hmm.
or you ask it as, or you say it as a statement. Like okay. I could say, you know, I would ask you, chai piviche?
Chai piviche.
Would you like to drink some tea? Or you would say, chai piviche, which means I would like to drink some tea.
Wow, very interesting. Very interesting. Chai piviche. I hope I'm saying it right.
It's okay. The pronunciations can be a little tricky.
Okay. Thank you for teaching us that. One more question that I'd like, a fun question for you. What is the one thing you want to do when you get to Kenya?
The one thing I want to do when I get to Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one thing I always like to do when I go to Kenya is definitely the first thing I like to do is to see my family. I have an older sister and I have nieces that live there.
Mm-hmm.
I have uncles and aunts and cousins that live in Kenya. So I definitely, the first thing I want to do is definitely just to see family.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully, next time I go to Kenya, I can possibly, I've not done shows in Kenya yet. I haven't been to Kenya since, my booking percentages went up.
Mm-hmm.
So I've already been getting messages from people asking if I'm coming to Kenya this December.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have a 2 month old and it's, she's too young for me to leave right now.
Mm-hmm.
So once she gets a little older, sometime next year, I do plan on going to Kenya and hopefully, doing a few things in, all over the country in the entertainment part of things.
Wow. Wow. I'm sure Kenyans can't wait because, you know what? 254 loves you, DJ Sunny.
Thank you.
Now that you mentioned about your 2 month old, what has been your biggest adjustment?
Sleep. Sleep. Sleep and, you know, just enjoying being a dad, enjoying parenthood, enjoying watching her feed, watching her sleep, realizing how innocent a little child is and how helpless a little child is. Like literally, this little human being can do nothing unless myself or her mother
mm-hmm.
are there for her. And realizing that there's a form of life, there's a human being that relies on you 100%. Is a little scary, but when you're in the moment, it's very fulfilling.
Good to hear that. Any plans of making sure she's on the DJ set?
Well, you know, I always do wish she could follow in my footsteps. But also, I realize growing up, she's going to have interests of her own and a mind of her own and things that she enjoys and doesn't enjoy. So as much as I would like to, I'll try and gravitate her towards this. We'll see where she decides to take herself.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that, DJ Sunny Sistuki. So as we end, please, do you have any social media handles? Where can people reach you? Any contact information?
Absolutely. So I have, I use the same social media handles for just about everything. It's at Sistuki, Sistuki. That's on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook is DJ Sunny Sistuki. Snapchat is Sistuki919. And I recently launched my website, which is Sistuki.com. You can book me through there. You can look at my calendar there. You can listen to my live sets on there. Also, all my social media handles and everything is on there. So definitely go check out my website. It's sistuki.com.
And I love your website. I've been listening to some of those sets. I really do. I like your website. Thank you so much for coming to this podcast. And I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, DJ Sunny Sistuki.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.